continue now. Rabbi Glatt, the topic driverless cars raise halakhic challenges.
Thank you very much again. The city. It's an honor to have the Rav with us and to ask Rishus to give the shiur. You can't come into a town and ask to give the shiur without permission. I got Rabbi Jay's permission. I have the Mar Da'asra's permission. I hope.
Yeah.
If not, then you got a lot of time to answer questions. So, another easy subject I was asked to discuss. What halachic shailos come up with driverless cars? Has anybody in this room been in a driverless car? Preparing for this shiur, I said I have to go into a driverless car. So Baruch Hashem, the chair of my radiology department in the hospital, took me on a spin in his Tesla. It is a phenomenal thing to be in a car that's driving by itself. Just an interesting experience.
Did you bench Goebel?
So that I'm talking about on Shabbos, actually. I'm talking about benching Goebel. It is a phenomenal experience to sit there. He turns to me, cause it's going by itself. It is an interesting experience. And this is not something that is a passing fancy. This will be the wave of the future. So this is the most politically incorrect slide you can put up in a shiur. And I'm offending both the men and the women. I very much like the left side. A lot of women turn into good drivers, so if you're a good driver, watch out for women who are turning. So the men are laughing and the women are giving me a look. So on the other side, if women are such good drivers, why do men pay more for car insurance? So now that I've offended everybody, what are the halachic implications in terms of a driverless car? So there are a number of things that we have to just be aware of. The auto industry is moving full speed ahead, no pun intended, with self-driving cars. Google is investing millions in this software, and that's the key term over here that we're going to be talking about. If you drive in certain places, especially out west in the United States, there are numerous driverless cars. They've driven millions of miles. I think they had the first fatality about 3-4 months ago with a driverless car. There are enormous benefits from both the halachic and practical benefit. They are clearly much safer than human beings. Driverless cars don't text. That's a very important statement to make. You have a lot more personal time. When we drove up here, Baruch Hashem, we had a lot of wonderful time, my wife and I, in the car, but I was spending a significant amount of my time concentrating on the road. You have decreased labor, fuel, insurance costs. Studies have shown this would be economically very beneficial for some people, but this will change the way we move. And, for example, truckers, that's going to be a huge impact if a car or truck can go from California to New York, from Vancouver to Nova Scotia, all by itself. So that's gonna have economic implications. And the joy of driving, I remember with great satisfaction and pleasant memories, the first time I was able to drive in a car. It was a very pleasant experience. It was something that you anticipated and looked forward to. Is there any halachic issue here with these things? So, does a person have a right to drive if a safer option is available? For example, my wife and I were driving up here. Does the best driver in the car always have to drive? I told my wife not to come to this. Does the best driver have to drive? Is that a halachic question? You're getting in a car with four people, you have to have a faher on who's the best driver. For example, husband, wife, the teenager. Insurance rates show the teenagers have much higher rates of accidents versus a driverless. One fatality in millions and millions, probably many, many, multiples of millions with driverless cars, only one fatality. Just the first thing I just picked up a random newspaper, 22 injured after jumps curbs in Times Square in New York. So the overriding principle is that you're not mechuyev to have me drive the car all the time as the best driver. The overriding principle is d'doshu be'rabim shomer p'sayim Hashem. This is a famous concept in the Gemara. Rav Moshe uses this as the basis for his famous tshuva, not asering, absolutely smoking. I mentioned the Tzitz Eliezer strongly disagrees with that principle in this application, doesn't disagree with the principle at all. Here, certainly, one could argue that the difference between, saying, the number one driver in the car versus number two driver, number three driver, is something that most people wouldn't think twice about. Assuming, Rahman al-Islam, nobody's impaired. I'm not talking about somebody driving while they're high. I'm not talking about somebody driving while they're impaired because of alcohol. Most people would say that that's dosh be'rabim. That's not something that you go into the car and say, well, I insist that you drive. You have halachic basis to say that a person has a right to drive. So, we talked about some of this, but most importantly,
you're going back.
Now let's look at another shaila. How will driverless cars handle the following scenario? So we can say that you may not be mechuyev at this point in time to purchase a Tesla. It only costs $100,000. It's going to go down. Right now, you're not mechuyev to buy a Tesla. I think you're allowed to say that I'm allowed to drive a car. Show me pesayim Hashem, dosh be'rabim. But let's look at the following scenario. You're driving in your Jaguar at a high speed on the highway, enjoying the scenery. You haven't touched the steering wheel, brake, or gas in 20 minutes. Driverless car. You're approaching, your car is approaching a slowly moving truck. Your car appropriately goes and speeds up, puts on the blinker, turns into the passing lane. Another car suddenly speeds up and swerves into the passing lane as well. An accident will occur. The only question is, what are the options? Your car is programmed. Your car is programmed to do something. It can do one of three things. It can stop turning, and you'll, because you sped up and you can't stop, plow into the truck in front of you. You're going at 70 miles an hour, your mortality is 100%. You're going to rear end that truck, you're dead and ever. Everybody else is fine. Truck's a big truck, he doesn't feel your impact. You keep turning and get rear-ended by the car. Your mortality is very little. You're getting rear-ended. The other car, which has four people, has a 60% mortality statistically calculated. Or you can just keep on turning and go into the playground on the side, which has 30 children playing over there, impossible to assess. Now, your car is programmed. It's a driverless car, but it's a bunch of circuits. It's programmed. So does it make a difference whether an agnostic or a Rav programmed your car? So it's very hard to find something like this in terms of halacha lemaisa. So, trying to find the source for this in halacha, you can look at the Ramban Chosh and Mishpat. Hayroa Nezek Barlov. See, damage is coming to you. See, it's a flood destroying your field that the Ramban is talking about. Mutul Hatzil Asmo, Apel Pi, Shaydezer Boha Nezek Liacher. You're allowed to divert the waters from coming into your field. They got to go somewhere. They're going to go into somebody else's field. The flood is going to destroy your field. So, Ramban Paskins. You can redirect these flood waters, even though it will damage somebody else. The Noda Behuda comments on this, that not only is the owner of the field allowed to do that, but any friend of the owner of the field, anybody that wants to, can divert that water from rushing into your field and instead divert it to somebody else's field. So this implies that the driverless car is allowed to save me, because I'm the guy that's going to suffer damage at the expense of somebody else. Or is this a din in financial damage? So I'm most certainly talking clearly here about financial damage. So the Mir Sinai and the Miskeres HaShulchan say, you're only allowed to divert it before the floodwaters reach your field. If the floodwaters are already in your field, you're not allowed to do this, because then it's already happening. And the Shemes HaTshuva's Goni Basroi says the same thing applies to a life as well. You're allowed to protect your own life, even if this will endanger somebody else, because here your intention is to protect yourself and not to harm them. So you are allowed, according to this Shemes HaTshuva's Goni Basroi, to go and divert that car, that arrow, that grenade that's coming at you, and deflect it and turn it to somebody else, even though somebody else would be damaged in that situation. Is this how we paskin halacha l'maisa? So there's a famous Jew from the Tzitzel Yezza Zatzal. He brings down, we'll see in a moment, from the Chazon Ish. And I, of course, love to throw this in because it was given at this 8th Siyum HaShas for the Daf Yomi. Have to get that in somehow. We're just finishing, actually, Daf Yomi is finishing Baba Basra and starting Sanhedrin, a great time for people to get on. But he said, can you actively do something that will save people at the cost of killing one person who would otherwise have been fine? Can you divert an arrow, as we'll see, or a car, so instead of killing this person, it will kill that person. And not only a one-on-one ratio, you'll only kill one person who would otherwise not have been killed, and you'll save 10 people. Is that a halachic consideration or not? Mitzvah Eliezer of Oldenburg Zatzal has a whole tshuva about this. I'll go to the next page of this tshuva, where he quotes the Chazon Ish. Chazon Ish was God loved the previous generation. Chazon Ish over here is quoted by the Mitzvah Eliezer. And basically he's talking about a case where an arrow is being shot at somebody. Are you allowed to redirect that arrow? For us, Rahman al-Islam, a grenade is being thrown by a terrorist. And you have the grenade in your hand, and you could pick it up and throw it, but there's lots of people all around. So you'll be saved, but you'll redirect that grenade at somebody else at the expense of killing them to save your own life. It will kill only one person, let's say, who was not previously in danger, versus a group of people that you're with right now. Let's make it even a moral imperative that might, one could argue, would be even stronger. So the Chazon Ish has the famous Gemara, Mi emar de doma de doch sumak tvei. Duma doma de chavrech sumak tvei. Who says your blood is redder than his blood? In other words, who says your life is more valuable than his life, that you're allowed to say, I'm going to save my life at the expense of killing him? And the normative rule is Yahari Bayavar. Someone puts a gun to your head, Rahman al-Islam, and says, kill or be killed. So you have to say, Yahari Bayavar. It's one of the three cardinal sins. Pikuach Nefashos doesn't allow you to kill somebody else. He's putting a gun to your head. I'm going to kill you, Rahman al-Islam, unless you kill your uncle. So you're not allowed to do that. If your uncle's a rodev, someone's coming after you, the terrorist's coming after you, of course you're mechuyev to shoot him. But here we're not talking about that the person who you're going to kill is the terrorist. He's the guy that Nebuch, they're telling you, kill him or be killed yourself. Handing over a person to killers is prohibited. The famous story of Sheva ben Bichri was a specific person who was mechuyev misa kohen, machlokes, Reish Lakish, Reb Yochanan. I'm not going to get into that right now because I don't think it's the pertinent answer over here. But here, he says, the case of the arrow might be different. It's a life-saving act. Nevertheless, the Chazon Ish is left with a tzarich iyun. Not sure how to pass it. Chazon Ish says he's not sure how to pass it something. One should have a tremendous amount of hesitation before somebody passes that shiloh. And therefore, the Tzitz Eliezer concludes, you're not allowed to kill one person even to save many. You would not be allowed to divert that arrow away from yourself or away from somebody else and kill somebody else. That's the Tzitz Eliezer's psak. He adds, brings down a Rabbeinu Yonah. In this situation, Shei Yal Tase, wherever the arrow is going, let it go. Even, he says over here, more people may or may not be killed one way versus the other. If it goes where it's going right now, it'll kill five people. If you throw it away, it'll kill two people. He says, you don't have the right to make that calculation. And don't divert the arrow, he paskins, even if several lives are saved versus one. You're not allowed to change it. Lo lahatos, the kumbi aseh esachetz, the tzadachet. You're not letting go change it. He says the same psak would be in our car case, essentially. You're going al klei rechev. He's talking about different type of vehicle. Kishinosim. He says you're not allowed to do it. You're not allowed to divert it. He says even though the Behuda permits you to kill a treifa, he says if the two people don't have equal lives, what is a treifa? Treifa is a person that has a shortened life expectancy, 12 months, let's say. Make it simple, that's not the halachic discussion right now. So the Nod Yehuda might permit you to save a shalim versus a treifa. But regular, non-treifa, sits only as a passing, you wouldn't be allowed to divert. Does everybody agree with that? So again, this is very hard to find written tshuvas on this subject. So I found this Rishimo Shiurim from a contemporary Rav in Eretz Yisrael, Rosh Yeshiva, Harav Baruch Dov Diskin. I don't know if he's related to the famous Diskin family, Mustafa is. He's a Rosh Yeshiva, Ibn Abrak. Maybe our Rabbi is familiar with him. He paskins a little bit differently. He understood the Chazon Ish a little bit differently. He says, you look at it technically. My chaz is the Dam of the day, Sumak Tvei. Who says your blood is redder? Maybe his blood is redder. But what if objectively his blood is redder? He says, that's why you're allowed to kill the road, Dave. Why don't we say by the same thing by the Rav Dave? Well, maybe he's more important than you. The Rav Dave is the guy in Hador. For whatever the reason, he's coming after you. You're a little nothing. He's the God of Hador. He's the Nobel Prize winning physician. He's going to save thousands of lives. If you kill him, all those people are going to die. He's the head of the army, the Rosh HaMemeshalah. If you kill him, the country will go to pieces. Everybody will be hurt. Pass away, Dishkevelah. So he says, you can't make that calculation in general, but what happens if you can't make that calculation? He says, that's why you're allowed to kill the rodev if we don't say that. That's why the mother, he says, you're allowed to kill the fetus. That's a rodev, so to say, on the mother. And that's why he postens here, one life is less than 10 lives. And if you could divert the arrow, and instead of five people being killed, only one person is being killed, he postens you'd be allowed to do that. This has tremendous ramifications in terms of Rahman al Hassan, a terrorist. Rishon Zalman, that's Sal. He says he wants to bring the following additional etza. Rishon Zalman brings a case where an elevator is falling down. And they tell you to get in the elevator. The elevator is going to send it down, it's going to crush Rahman al Hassan, a baby. You could never imagine such things happening until you know terrorism. And terrorism, stories of the Holocaust. Shelos and Shuvas, Mimaham Akim, the Radvaz, with cutting off of the finger. I mean, if you know Halacha, if you know our history of persecution, can you imagine such things ever occurring? Otherwise, who would ever think of such things on their own? And Nebuch, our tormentors. He brings the case where they tell you, get to the elevator, and your additional weight will crush the baby a little bit faster, a little bit stronger. So you're allowed to get into the elevator. You say, Yahari Bayavar, I'm not going in the elevator. Enter the elevator or be killed. So your additional force is going to crush Rahman al-Islam, that baby. She says, you're not responsible in that situation to not get into the elevator. The elevator would have done the same thing no matter what. He wants to use this as an idea, therefore, that the passengers in the car aren't considered a rodev. Because they're just extra weight, so to say. The car is going to hit you anyway. Well, yes, their additional weight may make that moving impact a little bit stronger. He wants to suggest that the passengers in the car wouldn't have the status of being a rodev in that situation. The driver might, but the passengers in the car wouldn't be a din of a rodev in that situation. The final point is, were the children in the playground there beforehand or not? That may be totally in the shallow that we wrote down for the Ramah. That some suggest that if the water's already in the field, then you're not allowed to divert it. So did the children in the case that I gave you in the illustration, were they there before the car turned or after the car turned? Because this, again, has halacha ma'aser ramifications. It brings down the Gemara in Makos, where the Mishnah says over there, Elazar Yaakov Amer, in Mishiyotza Eben Miyodo Hotzi Halas Rosho, Hareza Potu. So you have the case over here, I don't know if you can read it, where the person is throwing something out his window, and then after it's released, somebody sticks their head out the window, and it will hit him. So in that situation, he's potter. Furthermore, the Gemara says later on, un mozzo prat le mamsi et zasmo. Mikano rebelozo Yaakov, in mishiyotso evin yodo, hotzi ago asro shol kiplo potu. In that situation where that damage that you would that you're going to occur was not intentional, that's called ritzicha b'shoge. So maybe that is not considered a problem. If the car is going to turn off in a path, there's nobody there right now, but it's going to turn off and eventually going to hit somebody. So that may be different than if the people are already over there. This would be all considerations that a person would have to put into the programming of this driverless car. Again, I don't think all the answers are in. I think all the questions are in. But there are certain things that we can do in terms of safety today that are critical. I spoke a little bit about Dosh Bei Rabin. Dosh Bei Rabin includes driving normally, having enough sleep the night before, carefully keeping attention to the road. It doesn't mean shaving. I've seen people shaving while they're driving. Well, you have also. Women putting on makeup, that's a biggie. I've seen people certainly texting, we've all seen that. I've seen people reading, having their coffee and then trying to put in the sugar on the side. None of that is Dosh Bei Rabin. None of that is Shomer Pesach Hashem. That is actively, intentionally, like the Tzitz Eliezer I brought down from last night, putting yourself in harm's way and you will be held accountable. And from a nezek point of view, from a damage point of view, that's a direct causation of damage. You'd be mechuyev in many damaches if you're causing. You can't say, onus rachmana patri. Listen, I couldn't help it. The guy who swerved into me. No, you weren't watching the road. So there are certain things that, in terms of driverless cars, that we may be asking Shilas about in the future. But today, halacha l'maisa, in terms of driving, there are absolute obligations that both the driver and the people in the car have in terms of making sure that that's a safe trip. So B'ezus Hashem, we should all be zochet to have a lot of safe trips, to be able to come to Torah in Motion conferences and to enjoy ourselves with the wonderful Gashmias, much more importantly, the wonderful Ruchmias that's over here. And B'ezus Hashem, we should be able to come back many years in our driverless cars, driverless planes, teletransportation, whatever the means and mechanism HaKadosh Baruch Hu allows us to identify, we should do it safely with HaKadosh Baruch Hu's help. Thank you very much.